Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Jenny Hubby, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with the lovely Jenny Hubby.
Hey, Bruce. Hi, everybody.
Well, another episode of the Just Us department. It's been a while, but, you know, we figured we would spend a week and kind of circle the wagons with the hosts of the show, see what these hosts are doing and where we're at with stuff. So it'll be a good change of pace.
It will be. So we are, let's see, we're the co-host and we're the co-guests.
All in one today. That's
You're
right.
You're the special guest, Bruce. Yeah.
The not so special guest. You're the special guest. But so, yeah, it's been a good run. We've had quite a few coaches on last month or so, and coaches in prospective to be coaches. And folks, we're going to have some more of that coming starting next week, or starting in June for sure. We're going to have some more coaches and prospective coaches that are filling the docket here, filling the show docket. They're trying to get on, and we're placing people as in our show as feverishly as we can. So being responsive and checking everybody out and everything. So that's good.
Yeah, that's it's Monday. We have. I mean, there are a plethora of coaches in the world, and we've been lucky to talk to some amazing. I'm always amazed when we talk to a coach and their ideas and their specialty area and their passion and their experience. So we've got more of that coming.
More of that coming. So, well, I'll go ahead and take the lead, kind of see what's been going on. You know, sometimes I do hang back a little bit on the show because the coaching practice that has kind of evolved for me has been more with executives. Executives that are facing some kind of trouble or dealing with some kind of trouble in their lives, particularly their professional life, also their personal life, obviously, but it seems like once things get to the professional level, crap gets real. Some folks who wouldn't ordinarily seek out a coach are seeking out a coach and or being recommended to seek me or somebody like me out to help remedy the situation. And so, yeah,
you're dealing with clients, a lot of your clients that are coming to you with an identified problem.
And yes,
yeah, could be crisis. Even
it can be crisis. That's a good thing you mentioned that. I mean, I did have a client whose family member had recently committed suicide, was causing the person undue stress with their work and family issues, and the company decided to just pretty much told the person they needed a coach, you know, and that's that, and it was going to be me, and, you know, here's Bruce, and get to know him, and that engagement was very fruitful, very productive, not only for the client, but the client's family. And then later on, that particular client actually ascended pretty high in the ranks.
Wow.
Yeah. talking, you know, really bouncing back from the trauma real well, but, and also because the, you know, client was able to keep their clarity, keep their goals, keep that focus. You know what I mean? They were able to ascend and even get a better situation out of their employment, which wasn't bad to begin with, but it was even a better deal. So that's the one thing that I really stress with my coaching clients. These clients where there is some sort of self-ID or identified issue of sorts, that we just don't do coaching around the identified problem. I'm still coaching them the whole person, virtually. You know what I mean?
Residual benefits also. They may be reaching one goal or resolving a problem, but at the same time, it affects their whole life.
That's definitely great.
And so some of your clients are sort of arranged, like an arranged marriage almost.
They are. Some of the larger companies have a cadre of coaches. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like the coaches are sitting in the dugout with their team shirt on, company X.
Pick me.
and the manager, you know, you get the nod from the mound to come out on the mound or whatever from the manager. Phone rings in the dugout. we need a Bruce Cameron. Like, we got one of those.
We got to sports here. And
well, no, but yeah, wheels up in 20.
It's a great
metaphor. But I've deployed to places like Switzerland, and I was in the Pacific Northwest last week, and West Coast, a good bit. And
North Carolina. Before. Mm-hmm. And so give us a real good idea, like just a scenario of you're called up, you know, you fly off to wherever, won't say where, and don't want anybody to narrow it down to who your clients are. But let's just say you fly off to work with a client. Now, is this like a short-term relationship or is it long-term? I mean, do you stay there? How does that all work when you're dealing with remote clients, but you're doing a lot of face-to-face with these remote clients?
Right. Some of the clients are face-to-face once a month, managed by phone the other weeks of the month. Some of the clients are managed on the phone exclusively. Some of the clients, there may be one face-to-face in the beginning and one face-to-face in the end. So really, you know, it really is client-specific, you know, in terms of what is really needed. But yeah, it's a hybrid of both. And I just want to go on record for saying that I know a lot of the folks we've had on the show do primarily phone coaching, and I think that's fine. That is absolutely fine. But man, there is no substitute for getting in front of somebody. You know what I mean? And I don't, you know, I feel that being in front of them, I can just pick up so much powerful objective and subjective data, you know, from the person. Just being there with them means so much. And I've always asked, I said, hey, you know, weren't you glad I was here today with you rather than, you know, oh my gosh, yeah, it makes all the difference in the world. You know, they see a face with the name or whatever, and they want to know who I am as a person too.
They want to size you up.
Why not? I mean, they're having to share some pretty personal and close items with me, and I take that you know very seriously and professionally, and you know, let them. Sometimes we'll be social media friends, sometimes not, but sometimes we will, and or share certain things, you know, that I have in common, or, you know, with the family and kids and interests. It may be a similar interest with the, either a sport or a hobby or whatever. So, I love, you know, doing that. Some of these seems like in the type of work I'm getting comes in three big flavors, and a lot of this is mediated by things going on in the business culture, mm-hmm. and in the press culture. I think problem number one is the Me Too.
Okay.
I've been getting an inordinate amount of business for executives who may have exhibited some sort of a boundary violating behavior.
Okay, on that side, not on the victim side, but on the other side.
Oh, on the perpetration side.
I know. I didn't want to say that word because, you know, well, they may not be. Yeah, or it might just be an accusation where you don't know yet.
Well, yeah, no.
By the time they get to you,
we're not drawing up a $25,000 contract.
Okay. No,
we're not.
It's real.
Yeah, we're not.
Yeah. Oh boy!
Yeah. No, it's glow in the dark by the time I get there, and so that's flavor number one is to so let's just park here for a little. So the Me Too thing. I mean, I'm saying that categorically, but you know, it could be sexual harassment in the workplace, but it could be far less than that, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It could be inappropriate texting. So let's say if you and I were at a party, Jenny, you're going to be my victim here for a second, and we'll be back. And so, you know, hey, I text you. Hey, it was good to see you at the party. Hey, you looked really good at the party, Jenny.
Yeah.
Hey, Jenny, awkward. Did you make it home safe? Jenny, you're going to talk to me or what? I mean, so, you know, just incessant texting, which is that's a boundary violation. You know, at some point that incessant texting feels kind of odd. It feels creepy. You don't know what's behind the veil, you know. Mm-hmm. What time are the texts during the day? Is the person sober or inebriated when they send the text? What is the larger scope of intent with the texts? Does this particular person sending the text have a history of other kind of naughty or boundary violating things from others in the same company, you know?
Right. Yeah. So how does your clinical background help you with you're waiting for that question.
I was hoping you wouldn't say it. You'd be like, oh no, I'm just that good of a coach. I don't know anything.
I mean, I'm thinking, whoa, this is big stuff. That, you know, this is not regular coaching stuff. This is, you know, big stuff. So yeah.
It's just it's different kind of stuff, right? But obviously me having a clinical background helps enormously because you need to know the gravity and scope of the target behavior that we're trying to neutralize. But it's not only a target behavior, it might be a target value system, like objectifying women or whatever, you know, or a different kind of lifestyle, you know, in the bedroom that conflicts with the workplace, or a value system that conflicts with the workplace's values on an issue. So, believe it or not. So, anyway, so yeah, so looking at the gravity and the scope of the issue, the clinical piece, you know, turns around, because obviously you don't want somebody. There have been 5 or 6 cases where I had to rule out if the person was just paranoid, was the person delusional, or was the person a paranoid, full-blown schizophrenic? So,
wow.
So yeah, making that distinction. Some of the ladies that have talked about suicide or and they'll cut themselves in front of their employees and make them touch the scars or whatever. I mean, some really wild stuff. So you really want to look at, you know, borderline types of issues and, you know, affective lability and stability and hero, zero, black, white, you know, all the good stuff that we'd see with somebody with a borderline personality situation. Because you really, I mean, that is going to set the tone, right, of the coaching plan if the person has a character disorder.
And how do you do that if you see that there is a potential diagnosis, or maybe they've already had a diagnosis? Like, how do you deal with that as a coach?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's really easy in that sense, because a lot of whatever that is, you know, really is the precursor and the driver for the problem that got me there in the first place.
Yep. Yeah. So you're looking at the root of the problem.
Yes. I sometimes actually get there, you know, depending, and it's interesting, right? Because using clinical methods, you go back, and using coaching methods, you try to look forward, right? And not to go back into a pathological stance. However, sometimes people will reveal some things, right? Mm-hmm. That are the root causes. And it can be the usual stuff, trauma, abuse, that type of thing. But, you know, sometimes it's just, you know, full-on self-centeredness and narcissism gotten kind of rough, you know?
Gotten a little out of hand, and maybe they don't have awareness of how it's affecting other people.
Correct.
And just saying, okay, these are the boundaries. Mm-hmm. Really clear.
Or they actually turn a blind eye. Excuse me. They'll turn a blind eye. And well, you know, it wasn't me, or it's not that bad. And, oh, people talk like this all the time. And I had a coachee who was, he himself, a very powerful individual in an organization, who was kind of called on the carpet for some language he had utilized at some company functions that had some sexual banter in the language. It wasn't directed toward individual, but it made enough people uncomfortable that, you know, it got him on the radar. And I mean, this guy was just, I can't effing believe, blah, blah, blah. I mean, the guy just, like, you know, bitched me out upside down. This is BS, Bruce. I can't effing believe this, blah, blah, blah. So the first two weeks were just him kind of venting and getting over himself a little bit and say, okay, well, you know, this is what you need to do. You can't, you know, you're going to have to do some other behaviors. You're going to have to think about this differently, because where you can go somewhere else where you can do your behavior, there possibly is someplace else you could go and do that. But I would think that sooner or later, it will alienate those people, you know, and you'll be back, you know, in a similar situation at another company. So it really isn't a good strategy for you, you know.
You really have great background for dealing with clients that are in a high profile crisis situation because of your professional background, which maybe talk about a little bit so that our listeners, I know a little bit about it, but so our listeners know.
My professional background. But which part of that, man? Go ahead and
I know. Which one? So working in the federal prison system, having the private practice, but you know, you're dealing, my guess is that you've got to be pretty tough, but at the same time, compassionate.
Exactly.
And but you have to have both. You have to be able to speak their language, and sometimes it's real power language. Mm-hmm. And yet you've got to be compassionate and understand where this could have come from, these issues could have come from.
Right. So it is. It's a mix of a little bit of everything. You get to know the person, you know, what the issue was, what the behavior is, what's the thinking behind the behavior. Mm-hmm. You know, is there some sort of pathological thing going on or not? Okay. And then moving forward with the 360 assessment, you know, which usually when I start interviewing people's wives, coworkers, secretaries, you know, other people around them, I mean, that's just game, set, match. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you get that Johari window, what you see in yourself, but what others see in you that you don't necessarily see in yourself, but they see it.
I don't like you don't that.
That's a blind spot. And yeah. So it's like, hey, you know, I'm not making these data points up, and here we go. And a lot of my guys love the empirical, these are data points, man. You know yes. what I mean? Like, I'm here to help you clear, you know, compassionate, but based on data, not just some me shooting at the hip or
yeah.
I'm Bruce Cameron. This has nothing to do with me being Bruce Cameron. This is me doing my job, taking the data points, doing the assessment, and just going through the procedures that we have in coaching, you know, and also, you know, what are their goals, what do they want, and those things. Mm-hmm. What do they think the company's goal is? You know, what do they think the company's goal and mission is, and how do they fit into that? How does this mm-hmm. behavior detract from that? And man, you know, you just see the lights go on and the awareness, you know. So
pretty cool. You know, along the lines of the assessments then, mm-hmm. let's take this scenario that you mentioned with some boundary issues with an executive. Mm-hmm. So what kind of assessments do you use for a client like that?
Well, I mean, with the coaching stuff, I mean, I can still use Hogan's and the Strengths Finder and all that other stuff. I'm not really using coaching instruments to diagnose the issue. I use the coaching instruments from, believe it or not, to move forward. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? To see what they want to do moving forward.
Yeah, to leverage their strengths.
Because
yeah.
usually the 360 interview and just yeah. my initial intake is pretty... Yeah, I mean, those are some, that's a lot of data right there, man. It's glow-in-the-dark yeah. stuff. It either happened or it didn't. And,
right.
But some of these, you know, again, I mean, this is stuff that has been substantiated through internal affairs type of work or through HR or through the right. Office of General Counsel. I mean, this is just not, you know what I mean? This is just not
it's not hearsay.
Somebody said boo at the water cooler and now they're lit up like a Christmas yeah. tree in trouble and have to go see Bruce.
Right.
So yeah, I think, you know, sometimes people lose their way in this world and they just don't mm-hmm. see life on life's terms, to borrow from the old yeah. know, recovery language, but man, they get caught in their way and their wishes and their desires. And then everybody around them becomes a support person in a play called Bruce Cameron. You are a supporting cast member right. in a play
and
called
I'm
Bruce
the star.
Cameron. You are like an ornament on my tree.
yeah.
But you know, I mean, just kidding, folks. Yeah. But it's that type of thinking that can creep in, and if it operates long enough, and it'll just create damage in the organization. Mm-hmm. It'll create possible brand damage to the organization.
True.
It will cause problems in work attrition and talent issues in the organization.
Very true. They'll lose good people.
If you are on an engagement that has a team that needs to deliver $5 to $25 million in the next 6 months of work, and that yeah. team can't operate, that you see what I mean? Is it?
Yeah.
You know now. We got a fish. We got big fish on the line. We got several fish. Now we got a stringer of fish. You know, so yeah, I think it's really interesting. I mean, I like it because in the government world where I worked, in the Justice Department, you could be a flaming whatever, and as long as you weren't a probationary employee, it was almost like screw up and move up. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Boy, not so fast here in the corporate sector, right? You screw up, you're going to get punished, or you're going to get, you know, demoted or fired or moved over or removed, or there's going to be consequences. Right.
Yeah. So in some cases, you're doing kind of an intervention of sorts in the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. In the beginning, it is like that. It is an intervention, kind of. It feels that way. Usually we want that done.
That's done before you.
Right. Actually, today, as a matter of fact, as we speak, you know, big person from HR says, "Hey, we got client X for you." Okay, I said. So go ahead and give us a contract for this duration and this amount for client X. I say, okay. And what is client X dealing with? Oh, these boundary violation behaviors that he was found guilty of. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Okay. Oh, dear. Okay.
So I did the contract, got it in, and I said, can I have the client's contact information? Like, stand by for 5 minutes or stand by for the rest of the day. The big bosses in client X's area are letting him know.
Oh, okay. That's the intervention.
So there's the intervention. Yeah.
Okay.
And so, I'm kind of the second tail of it, or the debrief tail of it.
You're the reinforcer.
kind of. And so, you know, I think a beautiful thing about it is that, I'm an independent contractor for the company, right? So I can say whatever I feel.
Right.
You know what I mean? I can say whatever. Now, I might not work for them anymore, but I can say whatever. I'm free to move about the building. Mm-hmm. I don't have to drink anybody's Kool-Aid. I'm here to do a job. Mm-hmm. You have a problem? I'm going to help you fix it. Mm-hmm. You got several problems? We're going to fix those, or we're going to try to fix them. We're going to get you to a better place. That's what I'm about. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's that. And so I think what it does is it gives my clients comfort that I'm not part of the company.
Right. And it's done in such a respectful way that it's we want to rehabilitate you, for lack of a better word. And we are going to invest in you because we believe in you. But this behavior is not okay. And so that has to change.
I had a very senior official for a very large airline, you know, and got racked up, whatever. And rather than have to go through some sort of remedial thing, all the unions agreed and the CEO of the airline agreed that this person would benefit from coaching. Right? And that sounds so much better than, we're going to send you to gender remediation training or something, you know, gender sensitivity class, something like that. Yeah. And so coaching is an easier pill to swallow, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then plus, everybody I've worked with is, I think, usually 5 to 10 times better than they were when they, you know, first walked in the door, we'll say, with me. You know what I mean? So.
Mm-hmm.
They're not only doing better, you know, do we neutralize the presenting issue, but we've also enhanced their other capabilities in the firm and even in the company and even personally. So it's been it's an amazing thing. So and companies like it because some companies kind of wince at throwing money at a coaching case for an executive, but once they see the return on their investment, it's totally worth it, you know?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. The companies that invest in that, it says a lot about them. And obviously, they have to value their people in order to do that. But then there has to be some kind of return on investment. So they either... they have to have faith in the beginning, but then they see that there is a return on investment because you may have, you may have saved an executive, a key player in the organization, and save them millions of dollars by losing that person, maybe to a competitor or having to replace that person, having that role vacant for a while.
Or if it's an intra-hostile issue.
Right.
So we have fighting inside the organization. We have the perpetrating or whatever, mano a mano inside the organization, right? That almost synergizes there because it's not that person's worth, what the other person's worth, and what their downline of work is going on, his downline of work, his teams, that other person's teams. Now we got, you
there's
know,
a lot at stake.
There's a ripple effect, 40, 50 people, what, $5 to $60 million? I mean, yes. I mean, so, yeah, I'm blessed to have several places see the value in coaching because they see the value, right, on what happens if this person doesn't get some kind of help. Look, they're not going to go to EAP. EAP sucks. You know what I mean? Their job is to refer you to a community person, and that's it. You got Betsy, who just got her master's, and if she spends more than 5 minutes with you on the phone, she's going to get dinged by her sweatshop operator, and you know. And so these people, they're just not gonna call for assistance. They're just not gonna do it. Now, I remember working with somebody where the executives actually passed a ball hat and put thousands of dollars in a baseball cap. Like, you need to get some help. We're going to pay for it. So,
oh my.
Yeah, it was nice.
Wow, that's great.
the company wasn't supportive, but the other executives around them were. So.
They knew how important that was. Mm-hmm. Well, there's an organization in the Dallas-Fort Worth area that I know people that work for them, a well-known organization, and they invest in their people. If there's an issue, they will help them get help. And they have sort of a return to work program. Mm-hmm. So you need to be out of work for now and get the help that you need. And this is your return to work program. And it's strict, but they do allow them to rehabilitate themselves.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
It's pretty friendly. So that's good that they can do that. And I know that, you know, a lot of my stuff is still kind of real time. Person still is either actively engaged and or at least engaged with their, you know, team or work via telephone or whatever and email.
That's a good point. This is sort of a preemptive strike in a way.
Yeah. I mean, that person better be getting a kidney replaced or something if they're not at work. So in some of these environments, if they're missing, they better have something going on. That's for doggone sure.
Serious.
So how do your
clients come to you? Do you already have contracts with the companies? And that's how they come to you, like you said, kind of in the dugout, and there's like an inventory of coaches, or do people call you out of the blue?
So it always starts out of the blue. It starts with, hey, we hear that you've done some work with this or that or the other company. And I say, yeah, I have. And they'll say, oh, man, you know, we'd like for you to work with our company a little bit. Do you have room for a case? And I'll say, well, yeah, of course I got room, you know? And then usually I'll drop a contract with that company, to do that. Now the strangest thing, I'll tell you the strangest thing happened. It's on my Facebook and it's bizarre, but I signed a contract with the Federal Public Defender's Office for the states of Wyoming and Colorado, and I'm actually coaching federal public defenders in those two states with certain types of criminal cases and stuff.
Wow, that's so cool. Talk about a specialty. Nobody has your background.
I'm dealing with this pedophile. He's driving me nuts. Hey, no problem.
Wow, that's amazing. What a great opportunity.
Right. And that was somebody who kind of heard about me and, hey, would you be willing to do this? And man, boom, I put that, the office of the courts, contract paperwork and got that in there. And that's it. I'm an official vendor for the government. And
now you're a court coach. Yeah.
And you know what? Well, not only that. And I have a Dun & Bradstreet number. Mm-hmm. That really helps. If you have.
Really?
That's kind of the big league. Yeah. I have a Dun & Bradstreet number. And now, that's like being the head waiter at Golden Corral or Pizza Hut. The Dun & Bradstreet number kind of tells other people that you are worthy of receiving a crap ton of money from banks.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Well, I'm worthy.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to see that self-limiting thinking is gone.
That's right. It's gone.
You're healed. Which is, I think it's kind of funny,
you're legit.
Yeah, I need more printer cartridges, so I need to go to the bank.
Well, my printer cartridges, I do need to go to the bank. Oh. They are kind of pricey.
I ran out of data. Now, that one I need to go down to the bank. No, I ran out of data on my phone. Boy, that was the case back in the day, to be honest with you. I ran out of data, but now with these unlimited plans, praise the Lord. But
I know.
But anyway, that Dun, right? Something so simple as a Dun & Bradstreet number. You think of it on the order as a Better Business Bureau, like, get the F out of here. I'm not.
Yeah.
Get what you're talking about, BBB. Like, oh, yeah, I saw you were BB certified, so I want you to be my coach. Like, maybe. Maybe not, So,
yeah.
I thought this was, but anyway, a little sidebar there. But office of the court, man, sky's the limit, right? So if you have coaching skills, you can go in as a coaching or a consultant in virtually any capacity with any large firm.
Yeah.
If you have the mental, not you, Jenny, but if you have the mental
me too
capability to kind of get in there and swim with those folks. And and I'll say this, another thing I'll say is, if you're working for a company regularly, know everything about that company, everything.
Understand the culture.
You bet.
Understand everything. Yeah, everything.
Who's in charge? Who's in this? Who's in that? Where's the company
good
headed?
Point.
What were their earnings in the last quarter? When are the evaluations done? When's the self-evaluations done? How are employees ranked, evaluated, this and that, compensated, blessed, ordained, whatever? And really get to know your person's job and what they do and how they do it. Just really get the full. Take your coach today at work, take your coach to work today, if you can't do it literally, but at least, really understand what they do and how they do it, because especially for men, and I shouldn't say, women too nowadays, but, that's really what's going on. If you can understand their work and the pressures of their work, and you can really appreciate that, then
that's a good point.
Then you'll be in good shape. And so
I think that's one reason it's so important for coaches to choose a specialty and something they feel confident in, because it's so much of coaching is about the questions, and to ask powerful questions that mean something and can change a client's perspective. You have to know something about their challenges and their life in order to ask the right questions.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Like if I'm coaching a brain surgeon, I don't really know what to ask.
Well, yeah.
But
But you better if the brain surgery partnership hired you.
Yeah, right. I better learn.
Depending on who hired you, right?
Yeah.
Who the stakeholder is, and it just drops down from there. So, yeah, even something as strange as that. But if I'm hired by such and such neurological associates, and this guy, you know, is whatever. And or gal is not performing, then I really need to understand the nature and the basis for that and what that looks like. You know, one of the things that's so simple, one of the simplest techniques that I use is I keep a weekly journal, and I implore my clients to keep a weekly journal of all the wins.
Yes.
All the wins they did that week in the workplace, even the little ones, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went to the University of North Texas, and I gave a lunchtime talk on forensic accounting. I'm just pulling that out of my tail here.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know what? That counts.
That's
a win.
Did
you go to a conference? Did you present? What did you do? Did you help another team out? Did you, you know, so all these things. And so when my clients hit year end, I can give them data back for their year end eval. They're like, oh, I'm so glad you remembered that. Yeah, I forgot I did this, and I forgot I did that. Because some of these people, even the narcissists, undersold themselves with some of the, they forgot some of their greatness, undersold themselves with what they had done, you know?
Yeah, that is so powerful. Year.
And so that is very, oh, yeah, man. Oh, they love that, you know? And then, you know, there are times where I have the authority or the, release to talk to their boss or their boss's boss, because they're the ones that kind of hired me, you know,
right?
Or a derivative of that, and just say, yeah, man, you know, here's what we've been, you know, look, things have been, and they don't really want to hear the detail.
Yeah,
even in corporate America, they don't want to hear detail.
They want results.
Did you fix this or not?
Yeah,
you know,
well, yeah.
So,
right.
And I'll say, man, person engaged, doing good, blah, blah, blah. We got some good metrics coming for you here on that eval. So, be, you know, pay attention to the metrics on what we're sending you. And you know, okay, well, thank you very much. And of course, they love it. That's their return on their investment in data points, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also a lack of lack of the problem, but also, you know, all these other data points that they can see. And it, man, it just, so they feel happy and you know, and then that produces more business. So
seems like the value of you having the clinical background is that you can say, look, you need an assessment in this area, and you need to have simultaneous treatment and for this diagnosis, and then that'll allow us to move forward with your
goals. For sure, and I've done that, and thank you for mentioning it. Yes, I've had them refer outside to psychiatrists, or if I have an addiction case, you know, they are going to do with Vivitrol or Naltrexone or some sort of antidepressant, you know, cocktail or whatever, kind of prop them up, keep them going to work. I'll definitely refer out. I mean, if they're not eating and sleeping, and if somebody's psychotic, I'm not even going to do a coaching thing. I just got to get that fixed. But, or bipolar, the psychotic, you know, if they're in a manic stage and it never really, you know, they can't sleep for days and they're just doing crazy stuff for 24 hours a day for about 3, 4, 5 days in a row. I mean, that's kind of epic bipolar one, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
then that person's really got to hit another level of treatment before they're coaching eligible. So, we definitely look at that.
Yeah. It hit me today in a networking event this morning. You know, it was something that I said as I was just kind of sharing what I do, is that sometimes a coach is the entry, the first, whatever you call,
responder.
The first responder. That's a great one. To mental health care. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, because it's identified, it can be identified up front with your assessments or along the way when they get stuck and they can't move forward.
Right.
It's, and they want to move forward, but they can't. It's probably something clinical.
is a good point. It probably is. And depending on what that blockade looks like. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that can oftentimes be a clinical issue and need to go sideways or punt or shuttle pass to the side to a clinician or a mental health professional.
Yeah.
You know, another thing I'll add to that, I think that sometimes people aren't spiritually aligned. Mm-hmm. For instance, they'll be, you know, they'll be condemning of somebody who's a drug addict, but then they'll say they have self-control or they have free will or whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
They need to have more self-control.
Well, I'm looking for people who, you know, who don't forgive but believe in forgiveness.
Right.
See what I mean?
Yes,
I'm looking for that incongruity of their spiritual values.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And that I'm not is talking about,
yeah. Oh, I know, man. I know I'm hitting some higher ground finally.
You really are.
But I know, right? Hitting these, you would think that So I, you know, there is this kind of a spiritual checklist. They'll see what their beliefs are. And again, I'm not talking denomination. All my Baptist friends are going, yay. And then they're going to be going, boo, when I just talk about beliefs. Not going with any denomination or anything like that, because there's just, I mean, these are all spiritual beliefs and they cut across all spiritual and religious domains. And so what I'll do is I'll look at those and see if any of those conflict. And that is such a good point. You know, wow, it sounds like you're kind of a hostile person, but you believe in forgiveness. And let's talk, you know, has that been a part of what's going on? And man, they'll be like, oh man, you know, just, you know, it's like the radar gun is going right through the stop sign. Like, oh man.
Well, and but I think it's sometimes, a great talking point. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people at the level that you're dealing with, sometimes they forget that need for the spiritual side, because what they're doing all day is empirical data. It has to do with results and data.
Right.
I have a client like that is, or I had a client that is, retired cop and, in recovery and had not done the 12 steps because, or she had done one and two because she was like, well, I don't want to dig up the past. And yeah. And so I get it. I totally get where she's coming from, but I thought about it later and shared this with her that what we do in coaching is release the past.
Right.
And so what happens if we're digging it up is we've buried it. It's there. It's suppressed. It keeps coming up to the surface. And so we're not reliving the past, but we have to identify it in order to release it and move forward.
Right. Exactly. Or at least try to work through it. You know, release sounds a little bit cathartic to me and creepy and therapeutic, but yeah. Working through it, if at all possible, because we all have schemas of how we handle problems, solve problems. We all have ways that we form relationships and maintain relationships, and those schemas kind of come out. And if there's something that we might want to change with that, then that's good to that's good to see as it kind of comes out. So
that's where the forgiveness comes in that you're talking about, and that is a tough one.
It is a tough one.
But it is a spiritual deal.
Right, forgiving yourself, forgiving others. Mm-hmm. You know, you can just get all those 12-step bumper stickers, man. Live and let live. Expect a miracle. Easy does it.
I know. They kind of sound tried unless...
No, they don't. Unless you really understand the context, yeah.
Yeah, unless we've experienced it, and then it makes sense. But
they're in.
Probably, yeah.
Well, all right. You snapped me into talking about myself. We got 2 minutes
that
left.
That was awesome. Thanks for joining the show, Bruce.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, man. It's always good to check in. That's what I'm doing.
It is. I love it. It's a good check-in. Well, I learned a lot, too.
Well, thanks for listening, and there's a couple of takeaways in there, but it is, if you can get into the corporate sphere or big business sphere and have a service for them, particularly like a concierge private service forum that that has merit and value for them, and they understand the value of that. Just getting out there and meeting people and making those connections, and it really is who you know. So
it is.
I mean, I have to be competent. Don't get me wrong. I have some degree of competence, but if I didn't have the connections or this wonderful radio show on LA Talk Radio, I would not be in my room here. I would be somewhere else. So,
well, and you've made it clear you focus on the mind, body, and spirit with the clients, and that is so critical for
change.
Yeah,
even though that'd be the last thing, if to look at me, you'd think that'd be the last thing I would do, but yeah.
So, I know you're a very spiritual person.
Oh, well, thank you very much. All righty. Well, folks, there it is, another great show. Don't forget to see us on Facebook at facebook.com, Concierge Coaches Show. Also, our shows are archived on the LA Talk Radio site on our channel, and also through an exclusive agreement with our producer and iTunes. We are available on iTunes, so every show is available for you for free. We've taken care of that for
it's
you.
Magic.
Because we're givers. Yes, we've taken care of that for you, so you can download and or listen to our shows on demand. So, and I can be reached at conciergecoach.net. And Jenny, what's your contact?
I can be reached at jhubconsulting.com.
Awesome. Well, tune in next week and in the future for another great and wonderful episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. We'll see you all next time, and have a great week, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Jenny Hubby, only on LA Talk Radio.